following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9.
Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you.
Listeners to this radio show should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the mutual fund, variable annuity, and variable annuity subaccounts. To obtain a prospectus, you may contact Friedman Financial or your financial advisor. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making a potential investment.
And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Daniela's Ristorante. Hope you're having a wonderful Sunday morning. We are kicking it off with an August 1st broadcast, 2021. The summer is halfway over, folks, and hopefully we get a better string of weather in the month of August than we did in the month of July. But, you know, it means we're also heading towards the end of the year, and it's time to start thinking about money and how we use money, how we think about money, how we plan for our financial future. And I've brought a special guest in with me today. It's our newest promoted individual here at Friedman Financial. You've heard Christian Karcher on the radio before, but last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, we promoted him to Director of Financial Planning. As Christian earned his CFP designation a year or two ago and has really become a shining star here at the company. And I thought we would bring him in because he has so many insights, especially now that he's a newly married individual. He's got lots of thoughts to share. So, Christian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mark. I'm excited to be here.
So tell me a little bit about how your role as Director of Financial Planning works here at Friedman Financial.
Sure. So I work with you and Marion on essentially number one on my list of things is creating and maintaining financial plans. So when someone new comes in and we have to create an initial financial plan, we have to gather data, look at their situation and make recommendations. I'm heading up that effort. And then also all of our clients who, when they come in for reviews, I'm helping take a look at everything, see what has changed, make any adjustments, and take a look at, okay, are there some new goals or new things that have come up in your life? Do you have a new grandchild? Are you considering retirement this year? All those things and the different scenarios and working out what does that mean for you? What adjustments might need to be made for all of those things? And that's kind of my key job here as the Director of Financial Planning.
And you know, it's interesting because we now have a third person who handles basically the financial planning and investment side of what we're doing here at the business. You know, it was Marion and I that were the two point people here, and we would rely on Christian to support us, and now we're bringing him into the fold where the three of us are even working more like a team. We're starting to see Christian going to some meetings with us, even running some meetings in some cases. And his insights have been really cool. I know we had an initial consultation just yesterday, and it was refreshing to have a new set of eyes on the conversation and share ideas a little bit differently, but all within the same philosophy of trying to help the client do what's best for them.
Absolutely.
So it's been really good. I thought you were going to say more than absolutely, but that's... No, I'm kidding. No, you're fine. So he's brief. He's even brief. But so I was asking Christian in preparation for today's meeting, what are some things that you think our listeners would really like? And you came up, of course, with tons and tons of things that you thought would be of interest to our clients. And I think we're going to enjoy going through some of these fun items. A lot of them are, if you've ever gone to marketwatch.com, there's a section in there, what is it called? The Moneyist. The Moneyist. And people ask these crazy questions of this guy. Now, I got to believe these are absolutely made up questions. Would you not agree?
I would hope so, but you never know. They could be real people.
Yeah, and so we're going to ask some of those questions here, and we're going to try to answer them for you. But in the meantime, I thought we'd first start with a story that you found. Where did this story come from?
This one's from the Wall Street Journal.
And it talks about how people today view cash differently than the way we might have used cash 10, 20, even 30 years ago. I don't know about you, but I always remember my grandfather, who was a shoe salesman. He would walk around with wads and wads of cash in his pocket all the time. In fact, I always used to joke when I would get into his Country Squire station wagon, his car smelt like money. You know how, you know, when you smell money, it has that like linen kind of smell? It always smelled like money. And now you walk around, people just generally don't even carry cash these days, do they?
No, they really don't. And that brings up a funny anecdote that when I was a kid, I would go to my piano teacher's house. And my piano teacher's husband was some sort of salesman, but he would also carry a big wad of cash with him. And he always had a little game. And he would walk in the door and he would offer students, if he walked in when they were having their lessons, and say, if you can guess the exact amount of money in my wad of cash, I'll give it to you. And that was always a fun little game. So there's another story of someone carrying around a wad of cash.
Did you ever guess it correctly?
No, I never guessed it correctly. He said he's only ever had one person guess it correctly, and it was his own son back when his son was young. So these days, you ask someone how much is in my wallet right now, a lot of times the answer is nothing. So when I was actually speaking with some friends this past weekend, we were talking about cash because I got married about a month ago now, and you know, you get cash as presents. And we were talking about how we viewed cash, and our parents were just horrified to learn that when we saw cash, we thought of it like a gift card. It's kind of funny money to us. It's not real. It's not on my spreadsheet at home where I keep track of a budget. It is just free money that's not accounted for that can be spent. So we Jessica and I will go out to dinner and we'll say, oh, it doesn't show up on our budget this month because we're using cash. So I thought that was an interesting parallel compared to some of our clients who might have ideas where there are people who will keep envelopes of cash in their wallets and portion it out each week when they get their paychecks to say, okay, this as much is for the groceries and this much is for this. And that is just not how some people are viewing it today.
Yeah, the world has changed. I mean, I think some that are listening to this radio show are probably thinking, well, I still have my PIN money. I think that was the term that a lot of folks use, where they'd put money in one envelope for groceries and one to pay the electric bill or whatever it was, and they were all apportioning it out. And in this world of electronic currency right now, where not only, I mean, electronic currency is no longer a credit card or a debit card. Electronic currency is Venmo and Zelle and all these other means of paying for items electronically. And you, as a millennial, I guess, have really embraced that, and so has your entire generation. It's different for those that might be in their 60s or 70s, imagining how their children or grandchildren might be using money.
Right. And I mean, if you continue that kind of thought process, another one that cracks me up is checks. So I have written checks before. I know how to write checks. But I know, Mark, when you've talked with your kids and they've had to write checks, you've kind of had to walk them through it.
No, not only have I had to watch them how to write a check, my kids don't know how to write an envelope. Right? I mean, we had Corey. Corey has been working here as an intern here in the office, and we had to send a letter. You know, we send letters out to clients, and so Corey knew how to print a label, but he didn't know how to write the address on an envelope. So we now get the envelope, and I said, all right, you got to put the stamp on. And he says, where do you put the stamp? And we had to educate him on where to put the stamp. The world is changing a little bit, and we need to learn to embrace that rather than get so angry about it. But the whole dynamic around cash is interesting. I mean, what else have you learned about things that are different about cash?
Well, I think there is something to be... before we just throw cash out the window, and admittedly, there's significantly less physical cash currently than there ever has been in the past, and people are exchanging it less because they are using credit cards, debit cards, and other forms of payment. But I think there is something positive to be said about cash and checks. And one of the things about checks that, when you write a check, it takes you twice as long. You know, absolutely. There's a stat in this article even that says, you know, a check on average takes 67 seconds to write, which that's a pretty quick check writing, if you ask me. Well, that's if you're writing one check. You're at the grocery store and you're going to write a check
for it. Who writes check? Oh my God, that drives me nuts. Someone pulls out a checkbook at the register. Now, okay, if you want to pay by check, have your checkbook ready, already filled out. You fill out the Stop and Shop part. The only thing you should have to do on your check when you're standing there at the register is writing in the number. It drives me absolutely insane. It's like, oh, hold on, let me get my checkbook out. You've been waiting in line. I'm sorry, it's my pet peeve. I'm into efficiency.
No, that's okay. It's kind of the same thing about the people who bring a stack of coupons and half of them are expired, right? You're just sitting there. You're like, oh, God, I really got to wait for this. But spending that extra time to write the check, there is something that goes through your psychology and goes through your brain that says, okay, I am spending money currently. A lot of times when you're swiping a card, you're not really thinking about it until maybe the next day or the next week or even the next month, God forbid, and you are looking at your bank statement and you're going, oh, wow, I spent a lot of money that day. Who knew?
Well, think about this. When we have clients come in and we'll ask them, one of the big questions we try to get from our clients is, you know, what do you think you're spending on a month-to-month basis? And many people don't really think about it that way. And so they think, well, I pay my rent or I pay my mortgage, I got my electric bill, my cable bill, my gas bill, whatever else it might be. And they say, oh, so it's $4,000 a month. I said, I got to believe it's more than that. I said, well, what does your credit card bill look like? Oh, that counts too? Yeah, it does count. It's part of your day-to-day spending, putting that money on the credit card. It's a lot of people think about that as just other money. It doesn't count as part of their spending ritual.
Absolutely. We see the same thing with mortgages sometimes.
Right.
Sometimes people will be like, well, I spend about $5,000 a month. Oh, and then there's the $2,000 mortgage. Oh, and of that $2,000 of the mortgage, $1,500 of it is property taxes and insurance. It's like, well, that's a lot of expenses that we're just excluding for no particular reason.
Or when people say, Mark, I don't have any debt. They'll tell me, oh, I'm very proud of ourselves. We don't have any debt. So what that means is they don't have credit card debt. They don't have student loan debt. I said, do you have a car payment? Well, of course. Do you have a mortgage? Well, of course. Well, that's still debt. But people view certain debts as good debt and bad debt. And if you have good debt, that doesn't count as debt. It's
right.
I mean, you've seen that plenty
right.
of times, right?
And admittedly, there is good debt. It makes sense to carry a mortgage at times. But certainly when you're looking at a financial plan from a financial planning perspective and we're trying to get an entire picture, we certainly don't want to be leaving out those debts, particularly you mentioned student loan debts, but there are people who will also group those student loan debts into the, well, that's not really debt kind of situation.
We had that yesterday.
We did. And just because it was student loans for your child or your grandchild and you're holding them, you know, it's not guaranteed that that child is going to pay off those loans for you. I'm trying to think of the stat, and so I'm not going to give an exact number, but it is a shocking amount of outstanding student loan debt, which is held by parents or grandparents of the student.
Of the student, sure. Yeah, it really is. It's remarkable. And then there's really no plan on how that debt's going to get paid off.
Well, and there's always a lot of uncertainty, particularly if someone has racked up a significant amount of student loan debt. Maybe they went to a private school. Maybe they went to grad school. And the question becomes, okay, well, the monthly payment is more than I can afford right now. And so the parent might say, okay, I'll pay the monthly payment. You guys pay me back. Well, the earning potential of the student now coming into the workforce is really variable.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what it's going to look like. And there's a lot of uncertainty there. So it's definitely something we deal with on a fairly regular basis with a lot of our clients.
Yeah, so the whole cash flow issue in using cash, whether it's on a check, a credit card, a debit card, actual cash, is a conversation that we have with our clients all the time. Many people are finding that, oh, when you deal with the financial planning, you're just talking about the investment account. And it's actually a very small part of the conversation because it's the bigger picture that matters.
Right, and absolutely cash flow is where we start all of our financial plans, because what that people spend is going to impact, okay, how much do we actually need at one point in the future, which impacts how we expect to invest and save. So that's always the first step, is we take a look and we say, okay, so how much are these people spending? That is step number one. We got to get a really firm answer on that one before we can do anything with insurance, with investments, with estate planning. We need to know first and foremost, how much are you spending? And most people really don't have a good sense of that.
But we can help you do that. And when we get back, we're going to share with you the steps that we take to help our clients figure out what it is that they're spending every month. It's an important part of the conversation, and it's and when people realize how important wrapping your arms around cash flow, wrapping your arms around your total net worth is to building that proper financial plan, you can feel far more comfortable about your financial future. So we're going to talk about that. When we get back, I'm joined by our Director of Financial Planning, Christian Karcher, here on the radio today. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
The following message is brought to you by Friedman Financial of Peabody through 104.9's Project Local program.
Hi, it's Daniela from North Shore Hospitality Group, Daniela's Cafe Danvers, Polana Steakhouse, and the new Daniela's Ristorante in Peabody, reminding you to support your local restaurants. Stop by the cafe for pasta and pastries. Enjoy a cocktail on our heated veranda at Daniela's Ristorante, or indulge in prime steaks and seafood at Polana Steakhouse. Dine in, take out, or purchase gift cards from all of our locations. Daniela's Cafe Danvers, Polana Steakhouse, and the new Daniela's Ristorante Peabody.
It's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money. We just want to make.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall, and just above Daniela's Ristorante on 41 Cross Street. If now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning and investment management needs, I hope you'll give our office a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. And if you like what you hear on the radio, if you like this financial advice in a language you can understand, we've actually turned a lot of this into really easy to read, snackable content. It comes out in our newsletter each and every Friday. It lands in your inbox every Friday at 10:30 in the morning. More than 7,000 people subscribe to this newsletter. If you'd like to get it, go to our website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go to the bottom of any page, put in your name, your email address, and starting this Friday, you'll begin to receive planning pointers and join the other 7,000 subscribers. Also, there's a space at the bottom where if you'd like, you can put in questions, you can ask thoughts, share what you heard on the radio. Maybe you liked what we said, maybe you didn't like what we say. Put it in there. I am really good at responding to all of those comments, so you will not be forgotten. We will certainly reach out to you, and I'd love to talk with you. But special guest here in the studio today, we have our Director of Financial Planning, Christian Karcher. Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
And thanks for getting up early again with us. It's early for you. I mean,
bright and early. Bright,
yes. Yeah, he's a young guy, you know, so these guys like to sleep till 11, so.
Oh, no, I'm an old man. I go to bed by 9, I'm up at like 8.
Well, no, you're an old married man now, aren't you?
I am an old married man.
So how's life changed since you've been married?
It hasn't changed much. I wear this thing on my finger all day and play with it, so I have a new fidget toy. To many people's shock, but it's not changed a lot. We're just slowly working through the thank you notes, you know, finishing off kind of the last of the wedding planning stuff. And we're hopefully getting Jessica's name changed over the next few weeks.
You mean you're not taking Jessica's name?
I am not. Jessica's taking my name. And so we're sending stuff off. The Social Security office is closed to in-person appointments, so you have to send all that documentation through the mail. And we'll be waiting to hear back from there to get the official start off to.
Does she have to get a new passport too?
She had to get a new passport anyway. But yes, she will have to get a new passport, a new driver's license. We'll switch her over to the real ID. And I had this really cool, my wedding gift to her was that I'm going to handle all of her name change stuff. So she doesn't have to worry about the paperwork.
Wow. Well, that's because you have Sonia here at the office to do it
for you. Sonia told me I'm not doing that. And so I had to go for my plan B, which was a service that you can go on, and they've got a list of literally every account you could possibly have. And you select which ones you want to change your name on. Things that you would never think of, your JetBlue rewards points, your TSA pre-check, all the stuff that might fall through the cracks. And you go through the list and you check off all the ones that apply, and they send you a package that includes all of the forms that you need to change your names, instructions on who to call, where to update. It's actually been quite helpful, so I've been slowly plugging away at that.
Well, that's pretty good information for our listeners. What's the name of the website? Do you remember?
So the one I was using is called Newly Named.
Newly named, N-E-W-L-Y, named, yep. N-A-M-E-D.
That is correct.
Wow.
And so far, so good. It's been really nice. They send you even the envelopes that you need to send all these documents off to. So it's been a really cool service. And certainly when we've got clients coming in with divorces and stuff, people sometimes have different names on all of their different accounts. They'll come in with a hyphenated name here, their maiden name over here on this account. And it can get a little bit tricky to consolidate and really get a sense as to your total financial picture when your name is changed on all these different places.
It's funny you mention that, because we see that happen here with people that have gone through a divorce, or people that, you know, had older accounts before they were married, and then they have newer accounts now that they're married, and then they want to try to consolidate stuff, and they need to fix all of those name changes. I mean, I think this might be a great story for our newsletter next week, Christian.
Maybe
we write a little piece on it. We share a little link to it.
I was planning on doing it for the newsletter once I had finished the entire process, but I'm dragging it out a little bit because we're flying and I don't want to change the name beforehand. So maybe this week or the next week, I'll give my initial impressions at the very least.
That's good. All right. So when we last left,
yes,
for those of you that were listening to us in the first segment of the show, we promised to let you know how Christian and I and the rest of the team here help clients try to figure out how much money they're spending on a month-to-month basis. And oftentimes we'll ask clients first, just what do you think you're spending and how accurate are they generally?
They are almost never accurate. And this is one of the things that a lot of people who are in the investment management side and do kind of really broad financial plans that are not very detailed or personalized will use as their input just whatever the client thinks they're spending. And very often that number is simply not correct. We've seen people who are guessing that they're spending 50% of what they actually are. And usually what happens when they get that number is they're calculating that number based on they're thinking about their bills. They're thinking about, okay, I've got my water bill, I've got my car payment, I've got my mortgage. Okay, that together, that's $4,000. That's great. Well, there's a lot of expenses in there that are more variable than just your monthly bills. And so oftentimes what we will tell people and what we do in our office when we're estimating someone's spending is we do not go line by line, because you are always going to miss something, and there will always be things that crop up each month that are not monthly expenses, they're one-time expenses. But they're one-time expenses that happen repeatedly enough that they really need to be factored in. So instead of going line item by line item, our number one, the first way we try to estimate spending is we take a look at 6 months of bank statements. So we ask people, please send us your last 6 months of bank statements. And at the top of each bank statement, it usually says something along the lines of total withdrawals from account. And if you add those up for 6 months, divide by six, that's usually your monthly spending. Now, some people, you'll have transfers to savings accounts, you'll have very large one-time purchases, maybe you're redoing a roof or you bought a car. Those you can maybe pull away and think about separately. But generally, if you look at the big numbers on the top of those bank statements, you can get a much better idea of what people are actually spending.
Yeah, we found there was an instance where, I don't know, about a month or so ago, a client of ours said he thought that they were spending around $7,000 a month. And they made a little more than $200,000 as a household. And I looked at their bank account over the 6 months that passed, and I said, well, if you're spending $7,000 a month and you make $200,000 a year, your bank account should be growing. That means there's extra money. But the way I see it, the bank account is, in fact, a little bit less than what it was 6 months ago. So my guess is it's not $7,000. And when Christian and others in our office, when we started to look at the bank account, we realized our assumption was correct.
Yeah, I think they were spending almost $15,000 a month. And we said, you know, this is a big change. And, you know, once we brought our number and said, this is the number we came up with, what are your thoughts about that? Does it surprise you? They sat there back and kind of thought about it. And they're like, well, we have been spending a bit more. And in the end, they said, yeah, okay, that actually does make sense.
Yeah. And so, but always the interesting thing is they said, well, you know, I could cut back on a few items. Maybe I don't go to Starbucks every day. And when you're trying to get from $14,000 a month to $7,000, cutting $3 a day out of your spending habit is not going to get you there.
Yeah.
It's, you know, are you buying expensive bottles of wine when you go out for dinner, and how often are you going out for dinner? What kind of a car are you driving, and what are the expenses associated with that car? What kind of a property tax or other expense around your house, such as the electric bill, the gas bill? Some of those things can be very large. I think it was fascinating to my daughter when she saw that she was paying about $300 a month for an electric bill in her apartment. Now, I don't know if that's big or not, but she was at her roommate's mother's home in Western Massachusetts, and their electric bill came, and their home is 4,000 square feet, and their electric bill was $3,000. I mean, I'm sorry, it was $300. Sorry,
I was going to say, 3, oh my goodness.
Their electric bill was $300. And Mindy's like, wait a second. We have a 900 square foot apartment, and our electric bill is $300, and yours is $300 for a 4,000 square foot house. Now, granted, I was actually at their house a couple weeks ago, and they're clearly not using the air conditioning nearly as much as Mindy was using the air conditioning in her apartment. But it is really interesting to see, you know, how people spend their money. We live in a fairly large house as well in North Andover, and you know, you get that report from National Grid periodically, and they say, here's how you're doing compared to the rest of your neighbors. Well, I'm sadly the number one spender of electricity in my street or neighborhood or whatever. I'd love to fall down in the other levels, but that is an expense that people forget about. I mean, there are certain months when electric is far more than is gas because of the seasonality of it all.
Absolutely.
And so we really have to understand what that spending is. So you were explaining that we go through these the statements.
Yep.
And the 6 months that we look at. What else have we learned?
So another great way of doing it is figuring out how much you bring in on a net basis and looking at your pay stubs and say, okay, this is how much I bring in throughout the year. Maybe you look at your W-2 at the end of the year and you say, okay, this was my gross salary, and you can subtract out what you had withheld in taxes and 401k contributions, and you get a number that's your net income number. Very often, if you are not saving money in a bank account, so what we'll see is a client might have a small emergency fund, but it clearly isn't growing or subtracting. It's usually staying about the same amount. Well, then we have a pretty good sense that you are spending how much is coming into the house. Now, that's not a bad thing, particularly if you are saving into your 401k, but it does tell us this is how much you are earning and you are spending all of it. And that is another great way of estimating how much you are actually spending. And then the last one that kind of goes along with that is taking a look at your tax return. This requires a little bit more knowledge of what's on that tax return and what needs to get pulled out. But we do that in our office, where we will look at someone's tax return. And from there, we will subtract out anything that might not show up as net income. And we can usually use that plus the net pay that you receive, plus the 6 months of bank statements. And usually those three numbers will triangulate a really good estimate of the client's spending. And I love it when we get it right on, where they'll all be within $50 or $100 a month of one another. It's like, woo, we did it.
And you know what? It is very eye-opening to the client. I mean, sometimes people don't want to see it. They don't want to admit that that's what they're spending. But when they realize it, they begin to embrace the way they're spending, and they ask themselves, do we want to continue to spend this lifestyle, live in this lifestyle the way we're spending? And oftentimes, more often than not, to tell you the truth, at least people we see in our office, they can continue to live at that lifestyle. They just worried whether they could or they couldn't. Right. And now we're giving them the confidence that they can. That doesn't give them the privilege to spend 50% more now, but it's like, you've created this spending lifestyle, and you can do it as long as everything else models itself along. And that's all part of the financial planning process. Because once we know what you own versus what you owe, that's assets minus liabilities, and we know where money's coming from and how it's being used, where money, you know, the money that you're depositing into your accounts and how it's being used, we can then begin to model what does the future of your financial life look like. And joining us today on the radio is our director of financial planning. I was going to say first impressions, but that's Jody.
That is Jody. Yes.
Our director of financial planning, Christian Karcher. And we've been talking about what goes into a financial plan and some of the questions that people raise and some of the thinking around it. But oftentimes when it comes down to planning, most people first ask us, but what about the economy? How is the economy going to impact what we're doing? How is something like COVID going to impact us? Are we in a recession? Is there inflation? Should I be worried? The market's at an all-time high. What should we be doing? So those are important questions that we need to answer too. And when we get back, we're going to deal with the answers to those questions. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hi, this is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here Sundays from 8 to 9 a.m. Let's face it, your retirement will be nothing like your parents. Your life won't be based on a fixed income, and instead, in today's world, it will be up to you to make tax-smart decisions on your 401k, your IRAs, and the rest of your investment portfolio. And it's all with a goal of using this money to support your spending needs for the rest of your life. This is serious business, and at Friedman Financial, we can help. With more than 50 years of experience serving this local community, we deliver financial advice in a language you can understand. Visit us at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Let's make your retirement all that you've dreamed it could be.
Visit friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Friedman Financial is a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC. Money, 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 money,
money, money, money, money, money. Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Daniela's Ristorante on 41 Cross Street. We've been providing financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area since 1968. No, I wasn't doing it back then. I was in diapers back then. My father started the firm back then. I joined Friedman Financial in 1991. Marion Gilman, my business partner, joined us in 2000. And in 2007, my father, Barry, retired from the firm, turning the firm over to me. And then we made Marion Gilman a partner in 2010. The recent announcement here in our office is the guest that we have joining us here on the radio today. Christian Karcher joined us about 4 years ago. We made him director of financial planning just about a week or two ago. He is a certified financial planner here as well. And Christian's an integral part of the team here at the office. And so welcome, Christian.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here this morning.
You're still sticking around. I mean, you've been here through two segments, so thank you for sticking around for the third.
Yes, we're going to go to the very end.
Yes,
here.
We're going to do it. All right. Well, you know, one of the things that people always try to ask us about when we're talking about financial planning is not always the financial planning stuff. It's about economics. It's about the outlook of the market, all that kind of stuff. And people seem to think that we have this crystal ball that sits here in our office. And every time someone asks me about the crystal ball, I say ours is broken. And I've never seen it fixed because it is the foggiest crystal ball you've ever seen. But despite all the fog, despite all the cracks, despite all the fragments, we got a pretty good long-term sense as to what is going to go on in this economy decade after decade after decade. What we don't know, though, is what's going to happen tomorrow. And anybody that tells you they know what's going to happen tomorrow or Friday or next week or next month is crazy. They're totally grabbing it out of the sky. Best example of that is COVID. Did we know COVID was coming?
No, unless you were really paying attention to the news coming out of China in December of 2019, you probably didn't know it was coming, and you probably didn't know it would have as large of an impact on the world economy and culture as it did. So we are just getting news, I think it was last week or the week before,
About COVID, that we're coming out of this that we're not coming out of the recession. We've long since been out of the recession, right? There was this thought that, oh, we're going to go into COVID and we're going to have this thing called a U-shaped recovery. Now, let's explain to you what a U-shaped recovery is. Well, it means the market drops down, stays low for a long period of time. A lot of people, if you ever went to the University of Miami, you know how to make the big U for the University of Miami. That's what it looks like, a big long bottom on the U, and then it shoots up. And then there were, the other thought was the V-shaped recovery.
Absolutely.
And that's what we saw, right?
I was going to say, and this time last year, well, this time last year, it was starting to look like there was a bit more recovery. But a vast majority of economists said this is going to take a while to sort out. We're going to have a pretty prolonged recession here, and we're going to take time to come out of it. And just last week, the National Bureau of Economic Research, that is a group that is tasked with determining GDP and when we are...
What's GDP?
That's the gross product of the United States. That's everything we create, all the physical things we create, the value of all the services we have. That is the GDP. And that is how we determine if we are in a recession. If we are in a recession, the GDP went down in that section. And what they're saying is, from all of the data they've collected, they take a long time to collect this data because they want to make sure it's accurate and they want to make sure that they're getting everything. They are saying that the recession lasted just 2 months. It was a very deep recession. Almost a third of economic activity just disappeared last year.
Some of it was 90%. Like, take the airline industry, for instance.
Of course. And so it was a very deep recession. But who would have guessed? First off, who would have guessed that we would be in a pandemic last year and have a huge market drop? And then once that market was dropping and we knew, oh boy, we are going to be in a very big pandemic, even all the economists said U-shape is the most likely. And yet here we are with a V-shape recovery. The recession lasted only 2 months. How are we going to predict that? And so to the people who say, what's going to happen later in the year? We had the presidential election. So many questions about how would that impact the economy? Would it tank the economy if X or Y won the election? The answer is it made very little impact.
It made noise at the moment.
Yes.
It made just like this a week ago Monday. There was the note that the Delta variant was spiking a little bit, and the market dropped 800 points or 900 points on Monday, right?
Yep.
And the news scared everybody. Oh my God, this could be the end. Stocks were starting to drop again, and then what happens on Tuesday?
We're right back to all-time highs.
Right. The market just responds. It's just, we have to stop the little sound bite, reacting to sound bites.
Absolutely. And so our philosophy on this is we know our investment managers. We are very comfortable with our allocation, and we're saying, okay, this is what we are comfortable with. But what we cannot control is what is going to happen day to day in the markets. So what we want to focus on in this office is not the things we can't change. We want to focus on the things we can change. So we want to focus on the financial planning aspects that can make huge differences in people's lives that does not have anything to do with what's going on in the world that we can't affect. So that's making sure that people's estate plans are up to date. We've seen so many people in the last few years. I mean, we have, 15 deaths in the office each year, unfortunately. And a lot of our clients have proper estate planning documentations, and the estates move very smoothly. There are people who come to us after a spouse has passed away or a mom or a dad has passed away, and they either did things themselves or had accounts all over the place. And it's messy, and sometimes people have forgotten beneficiaries or left old beneficiaries. That is a huge mess for your heirs to try to figure out.
Yeah, and it's very frustrating to the survivors. And I know that it was never the intention, well, I believe it was never the intention of the deceased to leave the kids with a mess. They thought that they had done the right things, but they didn't realize some of the complexities that they created by making some of the decisions that they made, whether it was beneficiary designations or setting up certain types of trusts and the inability to unwind some of those trusts once time had passed. It's very frustrating. And so that's a lot of what we've been doing in the office as well.
Right. And that's something we can focus on, and we can make sure that we are saving people time and money and stress and effort with pretty minimal work up front to prevent a lot of work on the back end. And so those are the things we focus on more than what's going on in the economy. What is this Delta variant going to do? Will there be another pandemic? What if a super volcano erupts?
Right.
We're not going to worry about it.
We can't. We have to control what we can control, right?
Absolutely.
And some of the ways that we convey that information to you, our listeners, is by sharing pieces of financial advice in a language you can understand. We do that through our newsletter that comes out each and every Friday at 10:30 in the morning. We've been sending it out, believe it or not, since March of 2009. And if you remember, March of 2009 was the deepest part of the recession from the financial crisis. That's when the Dow Jones Industrial Average, get this, was at 6,600. The Dow Jones Industrial Average today is hovering around 35,000. When the market was down at 6,600, around there in March of 2009, people thought, oh my God, in my lifetime will I ever see it recover to 11,000 where it was before? Well, we remain optimistic, and we have a great deal of optimism about the future of this country, though everybody has their personal opinions, politically driven, all different ways. But long term, I'm going to trust in U.S. corporations to innovate, because that's what we've already proven that we can do time and time again. We just did it in this pandemic, didn't we?
Absolutely. I mean, the additions of it, who knew what Zoom was in December of 2019? I mean, I thought it was a kid show that I watched at my grandma's when I was a kid.
You watched Zoom?
Zoom.
Did you know that Zoom, and Kristen's from Minnesota. I'm not too many. Oh, my God.
No.
Kristen's from Wisconsin. Did you know, Kristen, that Zoom originated in Allston, Mass?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So everybody. So, you know, I could sing you the whole theme song to Zoom.
Zoom.
Come on, give it a try. We're going to show you just why. We're going to treat you to fly high. Come on and Zoom. But if you wanted to write to Zoom, that's P.O. Box. That's Zoom. P.O. Box. Then it's Boston, Mass. 02134. Send it to Zoom. I forgot the P.O. Box number, but I do remember the zip code.
That's pretty good.
Because it was in Allston, Massachusetts. I'm 55. So, I mean, the last time I watched that was probably 50 years ago. And still, the zip code for Allston, Mass. still sticks with me. It was actually called Boston, Mass at the time. But Allston is now 02134. So that's right.
Blast
Zoom was
from
a kid
the past.
Show.
There you go.
So, but think about this. Think about restaurants have had to innovate over this past year, embracing technology. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about how Peloton expanded its business and developing it online. Businesses innovated during this time, and those that innovated during these challenging periods of time became more and more profitable, and they have stronger business models. That's what U.S. corporations will continue to do time and time again. That's why whenever we hit bumps in the road, I'm going to trust in American ingenuity to get us out of problems on the long term. Short term, we got to figure that out. But we're getting there. Was there anything else that came from this COVID recession study that you wanted to tell our listeners about? And I'm going to say from a look on your face that you got it pretty well covered. Are you worried about having to wear masks long term?
I'm not worried about it. I'm happy to wear a mask. I don't really care if I have to wear a mask when I run into the grocery store.
Yeah, and we're fully vaccinated here in the office. I think it's a bold move, but I think it's the right move for our government to start stepping up and saying, look, we're going to start mandating that our federal employees have to get vaccinated. There's a bunch of CEOs that are now coming out and saying, if you want to come back to work, get vaccinated or get fired. And it's really that simple. It's for the safety. Now, I know not everybody agrees with that premise, but I think what we need to do is we have to get through the full approval of these vaccines. If we can get full FDA approval of the safety of these vaccines, I think people will feel more and more comfortable about getting them. All right, we've got to take a quick break. When we're back, I thought, Kristen, you know, you and I have been going through the Market Watch pieces, and the Moneyist is a guy that sits at Market Watch, and he answers questions that come in from readers. And some of the questions are some of the silliest questions I've ever heard. And he answers them, but I gotta believe that people really can't be asking these questions.
I think some of them are.
All right, well, we're gonna pose some of these questions, and we'll let you know what we think to the answers, and we'll give you some financial advice in a language you can understand. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hi, this is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here Sundays from 8 to 9 a.m. Let's face it, your retirement will be nothing like your parents'. Your life won't be based on a fixed income, and instead, in today's world, it will be up to you to make tax-smart decisions on your 401k, your IRAs, and the rest of your investment portfolio. And it's all with a goal of using this money to support your spending needs for the rest of your life. This is serious business, and at Friedman Financial, we can help. With more than 50 years of experience serving this local community, we deliver financial advice in a language you can understand. Visit us at FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com. Let's make your retirement all that you've dreamed it could be.
Visit FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com. Friedman Financial is a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Daniela's Ristorante. If now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning and investment management needs, I hope you'll give our office a call, 978-531-8108. We are scheduling free initial consultations for listeners of this radio show and to all people that are interested in talking with us. The best thing to do is give our office a call. Let us talk with you a little bit on the phone. Or if you have a question, you can certainly drop us an email at mark@friedmanfinancial.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-C, at friedmanfinancial.com. Or when you call the office, call during the day. Jody, happy to talk to you. We're all happy to talk to you. Or we can also send you one of our information kits. But if you say, you know, I'm not the type of person that likes to pick up the phone, I don't really want to start talking to people because I don't know what to ask, I would suggest to you is to go to our website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go onto the tab that says New Client Information. We've got a little slide presentation there that gives you a sense as to how we work with our clients. I think it's really easy to follow. I think you'll really see how we differentiate ourselves from a lot of other investment slash financial planners that are out there. But for now, I thought we would take it some questions. Some of these questions that we've seen posted in MarketWatch.com, and I'm joined by our Director of Financial Planning, Kristen Karcher, on the radio today, and we're going to tackle some of these questions that are posted on MarketWatch. And what do you think about these questions, Kristen?
Well, I think it's really fascinating how many of them realistically come down to personal relationships more than they actually come down to money. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them are my boyfriend, my aunt, my mom, my child.
Or I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah, right, exactly. but it's really, almost none of them, they kind of have a financial backdrop, but they are not necessarily finance questions, but I think they're really fascinating. And maybe some of them are a bit on the extreme side of the spectrum, but they are similar to some questions that we get in the office and that we talk through with clients. So the first one here, which I found pretty interesting with my new promotion.
Yeah.
The question is, my girlfriend makes twice what I earn. I reluctantly paid a $200 dinner check for her first promotion. She just got another one. Should I pay again? What do you think, Mark?
So let me be sure I understand this. So the girlfriend, makes twice what the boyfriend earns, but he agreed to pay for a dinner check worth $200. Yet she just got another promotion, and he wants to know if he should take her out to celebrate and pay another $200 check.
Yep, that's the question.
That's pretty much the question. That's the most ridiculous question ever. That's the way I look at that first. Who asked that question? What kind of a conversation relationship do you have? I mean, it's when you're in a relationship, mm-hmm. when you're in a relationship, there needs to be an open dialogue around money.
Absolutely.
And clearly there's not one that's happening here because this guy is relying on a third party to give him financial relationship advice over a $200 check. We're not talking about a mortgage. We're not talking about the purchase of a house. We're talking about a $200 check. Now, I would bet this guy would not think twice about buying her a more than $200 birthday present or spending more than $200 for Christmas, but he's jealous. I think he's jealous that his girlfriend is making twice as much money, if not more than him, and that she shouldn't have to do that.
At the risk of flaming this the question asker here, I also wonder how much of their joint expenses he contributes to in comparison to her. Either way, I find it very odd. At least in my relationship, when one of us gets a promotion, we do usually go out. We'll get either appetizers and drinks, or we'll get dinner. And generally, it comes out of money that we use for joint bills, or the person who's getting the promotion is saying, okay, I'm using a little bit of my extra new promotion money to buy the dinner. So I think that's a pretty easy solution to that.
Yeah, well, I know that my wife, Laura, who grew up with five kids, and we have five kids, but I'm just using Laura's example. When she was growing up, when one of the kids got a promotion or a raise, that the person that got the promotion or the raise would take the rest of the siblings out for dinner or out for lunch or something to celebrate. But just because, but look, he was offering to pay the tab, this guy. She wasn't saying, oh, you have to pay the tab. He probably said, oh, no, I'll get it. Congratulations. How do we even know that this girl wasn't planning on paying, but he just said, I'll pay for it. I don't want any money. So I think there's a lot of different ways to interpret these questions. All right, give us another one. Let's move on to something else that's maybe less silly or equally as silly.
Well, this one's interesting. It says, my boyfriend provides for me and my daughter. I'm about to receive an $800,000 settlement. Should I put the money into his house? So in this scenario, I read through, she adds a little bit of extra detail. She is about 10 years younger than her boyfriend, and she lives with her boyfriend in her boyfriend's house that he owns. She's going to receive a settlement from an accident that she had for $800,000. Currently, her boyfriend is paying for all of her expenses, for all of her daughter's expenses, and she's getting this $800,000. It's the only money she has to her own name, and she wants to use it to make improvements on his house. What do you think about that, Mark?
Well, first of all, does the boyfriend even know that she's getting the money?
That's a great question.
We don't even know that. That's number one. And number two, they're not married, and it's his house. So she can't say, oh, I just inherited this money. I'm going to paint the house green. Or I want to replace the carpet. Or I want to put in hardwood floors. Or this countertops don't work out. No, it's his house. Now, if you want to use that money to buy him a gift or maybe to help with some improvement that he was already planning on, unless maybe you're engaged or whatever else it is, you don't have the right to go into this guy's house and just start, just because you have the money, making improvements in the house. You know, I want to put an elevator in the house. I don't think you could do that.
Well, for me, my big concern was it's her boyfriend. Her boyfriend is 10 years older than she is. Okay, so if the boyfriend is to pass away, what money does she have to her name if she puts all of this money into home improvements?
That's a very good question.
For her and her daughter.
Yeah, so if the boyfriend owns the house and she owns none of the house, and she says, well, I'll throw in $60,000 to replace the kitchen, and he dies, where does she live?
Exactly.
She's on the street because his house gets sold and given to his siblings or his parents, or unless he specifically named her as the beneficiary, but that would have to be within the will if he's the sole owner of it on the deed. And so she can't say, well, I just gave you $50,000 for the kitchen. I want that money back.
Absolutely not.
It doesn't work that way, does it?
No, not at all. And if something were to happen in the relationship, there's no marriage, so there's going to be no divorce settlement.
Right.
She needs to make sure that she has some money for herself. It doesn't sound like she's been a particularly good saver her entire life. And so, you know, this $800,000 could really provide a nice security net to make sure maybe you send your daughter to college, even if you have a messy breakup with this boyfriend. So I think it's quite interesting. You know, people who maybe get divorced and remarried, or divorced and find another significant other later in life, which we see a lot of in our office, there's a whole conversation that often is never had about what happens if one of us is to pass away, and have we planned for that financially? And that's something that we run into somewhat regularly.
Yeah, not only do we run into it, when we do have the question, we have the conversation with people, we find that what their expectation is of what happens is far different from what will really happen. And that can be eye-opening. Oftentimes people will argue with us and say, oh no, that's not right. We've been doing this a long time. Mm-hmm. We know what's going to happen. It's not because you're, you know, your neighbor. It's like, you know, there was a political cartoon, one of these memes that came up that that said, you know, hey, I went to my doctor and I was asking him, when do you think this COVID thing might end? And he said, I don't know. But he says, but perhaps you should go to Google. The politicians have better answers. I mean, the whole thing is that the people that are experts should be the people that are relied upon for the right answer, not Google, not a politician, not your neighbor, not a colleague, not whomever. We have to rely on experts, and we always want to second guess the expert these days. You go to the doctor and the doctor gives you a diagnosis and you'll go to Professor Google and say, well, Professor Google says there's four other alternatives and I like those alternatives better than what you're seeing. How much does the computer know about your real situation? And I know I go off on a tangent on that, but still, that's what it is. You have to have those conversations, authentic conversations, and trust in professionals.
Absolutely. Now let's get back to our completely computer-generated questions.
Yes, that's right.
That are being asked to random people on the internet with little context.
We've got about a minute to get through the last question. Let's go through a last question.
This one is just to make you laugh. My son has lazyitis. He only contacts me on birthdays and Mother's Day. I fear him inheriting my estate will only make it worse. What should I do?
What should you do? Well, you could say, you could just cut him out. That's one. And if what's he call? Is he only call? Is he calling just to make you sure that he knows that mom knows that he still exists, so that he gets a piece of the inheritance? I think it all comes down to conversations. When people are like relying on these third party entities to have their Dear Abby questions answered, it's an insecurity that they have. To say, I don't know how to talk to my children.
Absolutely.
Or I don't know how to talk to my parents. And if there's one thing that we do at Friedman Financial, and I think we do it really well, is to serve as the facilitator in conversations, to open up the dialogue so that people can feel more comfortable about talking about money. All right, we're up against the clock. I got to get ready to turn this thing over to Scott Whitley and Wicked Bites Radio. But before we head out, I want to remind you all that we put out a free weekly newsletter each and every Friday morning. It comes out at 10:30 in the morning, lands in your inbox at 10:30. You'll be among 7,000 subscribers if you get it. It's called Planning Pointers. We provide financial advice in a language you can understand. People love it. And it's a great way to stay in touch with us, too. Send us questions. Send us thoughts. If you want to sign up for the newsletter, go to our website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go to the bottom of any page. Put in your name, your email address, and you can write a little comment to us or just leave it blank and hit send, and you'll be registered for the newsletter. If you would like to schedule a free initial consultation, please give our office a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. I want to thank our special guest, Christian Karcher, our Director of Financial Planning, for joining us today. And we got to get out of here. We're turning it over to Scott Whitley in Wicked Bites Radio. Scott, it's all up to you. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.